Welcome to The Sound of Economics, the podcast series by Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic think tank. I'm Giuseppe Porcaro, and here at Bruegel, we are undergoing a research project on the future of work and inclusive growth in Europe. The project analyzes the impact of technology on the nature, quantity, and quality of work, welfare systems, and inclusive growth at large. The Sound of Economics is proud to contribute to the project with a space for discussion and analysis on this theme. As with the other episodes of this series, I'm accompanied by Laura Nursky, who is a Bruegel Fellow and one of the researchers at the core of the project. Hi, Laura. How are you?
Hi, Giuseppe. I'm great. Thank you. I'm very happy to be here today and to have Sabine join us, who is a member of our excellence network in the project on the future of work.
Indeed, today we will explore the relation between artificial intelligence and job transformation and ask ourselves the question whether the impact differ by gender. And Sabine with us will help us navigating through this question. And I'm also very happy to have her. She's part of the Excellence Network, as Laura just said. And Sabine is also professor for labor science and organization at the Vienna University of Technology and member of the high-level expert group on AI of the European Commission. Hi, Sabine. Thanks for joining us at The Sound of Economics.
Hi, I'm very happy that you have me here and that we talk about gender-related issues.
That's really great. And Sabine, I would like to ask you to kick off the conversation first about your take on the broader issue which we are exploring throughout our series dedicated to the future of work. Artificial intelligence technologies have advanced rapidly over the last decades and are transforming the way in which labor relationships are established. And this huge technological change is associated to a transformation in the distributions of tasks among people and the machines. Through the lenses of the intersectionality between gender studies and labor economics, how do you see the impact of AI really going?
With the Oxford study of the United States estimating that every second job will be gone or automated through these new technologies, I think there was an eruption going through many scientific and political communities. And in the meantime, we have seen many other studies showing that these predictions were too, well, how should I say, they were too pessimistic, right? In terms of that these studies generally tend to measure only the potential of automation, but do not consider other factors like economic factors or societal factors or feasibility factors even that may lead not to adopt the technology at that pace or at that extent. However, what is very clear is, so we might not, I think serious studies differ, of course, but would estimate that 10 to 15% of jobs may get automated in the future, completely automated. But at the same time, and I think this is an important thing, is that it is estimated that practically every job is changing, right? And I think this is the more useful perspective on how AI will change the future of work. It will change basically every job, every profession, because there are tasks that may be automated and others which are not. So job profiles will change, which will also change a skills profile. And now there comes this gender issue in. Because in the first place, we have segregation within professions, gender segregations. We know that women, for instance, are more often in care jobs and men are more often in high-tech jobs and programming jobs, etc. So there is a segregation of gender. So industries might be affected differently, as we see from computerization and automation. But secondly, we also have within profession a segregation in gender, right? Let me give you one example, because it's university, right? If you think universities do research and teaching, right? And third mission projects. And then it is very often that you find men being engaged in research while women being more engaged in teaching, right? So even within professions, we would have this job segregation, this task segregation between men and women, and that is associated to stereotypical ascriptions. And obviously then we will observe that women and men are affected differently by computerization, also within professions.
Great, Sabine. Very interesting. And I want to zoom in a little bit more on this occupational level that you just described. So some occupations are more technologically intensive than others. And how does the gender balance relate to that within occupations? And does that pose a risk for female employment as more and more occupations become more technologically intensive?
That's a very interesting question. And we have, in some professions, we have already first observation, what happens if you put more technology into a job? And one interesting profession is, for instance, the healthcare profession. And if you look there, the more technology is used as care technology, the more men you will find, for instance. Think about intensive care units where you take care of elderly people, right? So there you would find a strong segregation. And that's an interesting question we have to analyze, whether this is going to happen in many professions or in all professions. The more you computerize them and the more you use technologies, the more prestigious these jobs are becoming, the higher pay is associated with these professions. And then there would be a similar movement that women are pushed out of these jobs, right? And there is evidence we know that pay is much lower in jobs with a high degree that require a high degree of social skills, whereas pay is much higher in jobs which require, for instance, technical mathematical skills. The interesting thing is, however, and this is already in 2012 or 13, I think the report was published, the World Economic Forum published a study by David Denning from the Harvard University. And he was looking at the change of share in jobs in the United States between 1980 to 2012. Looking at two dimensions, right? How many mathematical skills are required within a specific job and how many social skills are required. And you would have jobs which require a high degree of both types of skills and so forth. And what they found out is, and this is really, really interesting, is the discriminating variable is not mathematical skills, right? Whether the number of job share will increase, but it is the combination of both. And it is the social skills. And that's, you can explain that easily. Computers cannot do, are not good in social skills, right? That's hard to automate, right? So if mathematical skills are required, then you're much more prone that this job is automated, unless it also requires social skills, right? And that's the interesting thing that we need to consider. It puts forward the idea that particularly the skills that we learn, even in preschool, like creativity or, you know, like problem solving and communication skills, empathy, all these skills are needed desperately in the future jobs.
So, Sabine, if the centerpiece of the puzzle between the distribution of tasks and jobs between humans and the machines is about skills, which are the main challenges of proper skilling across genders?
What we have to consider is that with automation, we have, so to say, three areas that we need to look into, right? We have areas where we have human activities only. This is what I mentioned, to lead, to empathize, to create, to judge. This is what human beings can do only, right? And here, machines are not of a lot of help, right? Then we have skills, or areas and activities where human and machines are very likely to have a hybrid setting where they collaborate. And this is where you use AI technologies to explain, to train, to amplify. So where technologies either augment or complement human capabilities. And then there is this area where we can really automate tasks. So the issue is that first of all, we need to make sure that people are trained in the very human-centric skills, right? And this is what we have a schooling system that is preparing people for an industrialized world, right? And it is basically not preparing them with the right skills for the post-industrialized world that we are facing with these new technologies, right? So we need to focus much more, and that's true for men and women and for all groups, right? That we need to focus on human-centric skills. But then the second thing is that we observe that despite high digital literacy skills, if you look at girls and boys in a young age, girls are as good as boys in their digital skills and digital literacy. But obviously, through education systems, their self-esteem is not very high. And so one of the problems is that they do not have a sufficient self-efficacy. And so they might choose then different studies instead of, you know, going for mathematics and ICT and engineering studies. They opt out or and go to social sciences and humanities. And that's one of the issues that we have: very early gender segregated education of people. And this is the second thing where we have to look at. We have to make sure that women are much more engaging in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics studies. So in the STEM subjects.
I fully agree. And we can relate that to so many things, not just technological change, how it's changing the nature of work, but also technology is changing product markets and expectations of consumers and how we deliver products as services through platforms, how everything has to move fast and how organizations have to be more agile to respond to these changing consumer demands. And that also changes the way we organize work inside organizations. So we expect much more that people collaborate in teamwork, networked organizations, more autonomy goes to individual workers. They have to be more problem solving. And all of that, of course, requires this huge amount of social skills. So yeah, all of that is changing the way we work together in organizations with other people and with machines. And for that, social skills will still be hugely important. And I think of my experience as a data scientist in the financial sector, which requires, of course, a lot of mathematical skills, but also social skills to explain your models to other parties in the organization. So data scientists had to have both this combination of mathematical skills and social skills, but still we needed then even additional people in our team that were called business integrators or business translators. And they had fewer mathematical skills, but much more of these social political skills. They could negotiate inside the organization to explain our models and to sell the models to internal clients. And this gender segregation was also so very obvious within our team, in the sense that the data scientists were mainly male, except for one or two women, while on the business translation, business integrator side, it was mainly women and just one man.
May I add something here? What I really, really find important here is that with these types of tasks, they are differently prestigious, right? And we pay them differently. And I think there is a root of a problem that we really have to reconsider the value of contribution. And I think that particularly those social skills, right, we call them soft skills, which is per se a discriminating expression, because I think that empathy and communication skills and collaboration skills are not soft at all. This is hard work to acquire them, right? And a lot of training and a lot of frustration we go through, right, to become an empathetic person. So I would say that this is one of the root problems that we have, that we evaluate tasks differently. And one inherent problem is that, just to make it sure why we have this gender segregation, we ascribe certain characteristics more with women and female, with femininity, and that they are lying in their person anyway. This is the implicit assumption. So women are relationship oriented anyway. It's their personality. Whereas if you do math calculations, you have to learn that. And that is a skill, right? And that's the difference. So we pay for the skill, but we do not pay for personality, right? And that's completely wrong, right? So we have to get that right. We have to get it right that it is a skill to communicate, to collaborate, to be empathetic. And it is also a skill to do mathematical calculations, or and it is a skill to be creative, and et cetera, et cetera. And all these skills are relevant. And what I find interesting is that it's the combination of both. And this is what we have to do. We have to learn, so to say, that's the wrong expression. So we have to make sure that girls get confidence in their mathematical skills and boys get confidence in their social skills, right? Because we all have that in our genes. It's just a matter of socialization that we lose one part of that.
I was thinking while you were speaking about skills and the different mix that is needed to face the future challenges linked to automation, I was thinking, have you found a geographical pattern that we can already observe where maybe we can learn some lessons about who is doing better than others, or like what a certain mix in the educational system or in the job market at the moment is producing as a consequence, also to place on let's say from the broader, more general discussion for our listeners to some concrete case and geographical scope. So for example, I was thinking, what is the situation in Europe and how does it compare with the United States? How emerging economies are doing on this? So which are the dividing lines that we should pay attention to?
There is a very interesting graph in the UNESCO report. I'd blush if I could. It's a gender report on digitalization, looking at how women are affected negatively through digitalization. And this graph is the gender paradox, they call it. And you know, the interesting thing in this graph is they list the gender equality index of a country versus the number of graduates in ICT. And it is a negative, significant negative correlation, showing that countries with a very low gender equality index have much higher numbers of graduates in female ICT studies, which is a paradox, right? It does not say anything about whether these women are then integrated in the job markets. Very likely not, right? Because in Europe, we have an integration of 50% of women are in the job market with these educations. In these countries, like, for instance, Saudi Arabia, we have 25% of the women integrated in the job market. So it's not likely that these women are, in fact, working. But what we can see is that obviously other factors or specific factors lead to the point that women are attracted by these studies. But that is what we have to analyze. So talking about geographical difference, right, we can observe that particularly in countries where we have a high gender equality index already, so we are further in our gender equality movements, we see less female ICT graduates. And then we have to look into this paradox and figure out what is the case here. And I assume it is a competition about prestigious and well-paid jobs that women are still losing out, right?
That is so interesting. And it's a paradox indeed, because before you were talking about self-esteem issues that might lead to girls not even trying to get these degrees and into these jobs. And this paradox actually shows that there's more going on than just the self-esteem issue, because even if women overcome that and they do enter those trainings, they still don't make it into the job market. I hope that in this project, we will try to get some answers to that paradox.
Yes, indeed. I think that this is extremely interesting, especially what you say, that is in countries where probably women are not even entering in the job market at all. And it will be fascinating to perhaps have some case studies to understand better what exactly is going on there. And also, I would say, if there is some sort of potential to tap in these kind of things, if this is some sort of seed to be used in the near future in order to tap into this pool of skills that is being developed over there in order to change also the mindset in those countries. But moving on from, let's say, the analysis part to the policy, what can we do in order to move forward on the agenda? I would like to understand which are the main fields where political guidance is required to smooth the transition and ensure that women face equal opportunities in terms of retraining and reskilling strategies. But not just that. I mean, as we just said, it's not just a matter of training and skilling. It's also a matter of access to the job market.
Exactly. But I would want to refer again back to this report of UNESCO. I'd blush if I could. Because in this report, they done a wonderful job in collecting data, but then also did a wonderful job in coming up with 15 recommendations, what to do about having women and minorities participating through access through digital technologies and digital literacy. And in these 15 recommendations, they are very straightforward, but basically they argue that we need to organize digital literacy access from preschool to higher education and lifelong learning, right? It is important that we change. And this is also something I would say we need to change our preschool and primary and secondary school education. Currently, it is important to create safe spaces for women to try out these technologies, to learn. So there are experiences, for instance, at universities that women would stop their studies of computer science because they think that they will never be as good as their nerds they see there. And it's not good maybe to make a course for men and for women, but you know, universities have started to have gold labeled course and black labeled course, where in the black labeled course, they promise to do all these weird and tough problems where the nerds go in. And then the gold labeled courses, right, the rest of the students goes in and they start from scratch to learn programming and things like that. And with the effect that those gold-labeled course people are, you know, in a safe environment where they can ask stupid questions and learn, right, feel safe to acquire this knowledge. And they are extremely successful at the end of two semesters, right? This is what reports say. They are even better in programming than the black-label courses because they think they know everything and there is much more specific discussion going on and people are not so willing to, you know, learn things from the scratch and adapt. And so I think there are many, many experiences, but what we need is we need to make safe spaces so that girls and women can acquire these digital skills. Another thing, and that is what I said before, we need to fundamentally change culture in terms of reflect gender stereotypes. And I did work, for instance, on female engineers and their professional identity at universities as a researcher, as a scientist. And one of the issues was always that the gender identity being female does not match with the professional identity of being an engineer. So you constantly have to negotiate your own social identity, which the profession and the gender identity is part of, right? And this constant negotiation to have an explanation, why am I here as a woman in this male job, right? This is so difficult over time that really many women, and I would say diverse people that do not fit in this, and that's it, that's the important thing. So people that do not fit in this male gendered norm, at the end of the day, decide to quit, right? Because it is an ongoing negotiation that is very, very cumbersome and very exhausting. And so we need to really change culture. We need to have many more role models. We need to think about even more extreme measures like having quotas, having specific budgets, etc. But I think this UNESCO report, if people are interested in it, it's 15 recommendations, and I think they are very well developed and formulated.
Thank you, Sabine. We are going towards the end of this episode, so I would like to ask Laura if you have some additional comments, especially on this last part that Sabine was mentioning about the recommendations and what we can do to move forward.
Yes. Thank you, Sabine. This was so interesting. And I think what I will take away from this talk we just had is how do we think about this problem as an individual problem or as a societal problem? Because you hear way too often the problem being put at the individual level, like, oh, women have self-esteem issues, women don't feel comfortable, women just choose types of jobs. And it's all their responsibility. And of course, that all comes with socialization in any case. But like you explained, we have to think about it much more from the systemic level. What are these systemic hurdles that are keeping women back in these technology intensive jobs? Because I have two little girls, they're 4 and 7, and I can assure you that they have absolutely zero self-esteem issues when it comes to technology. I cannot keep them away from the iPad, from my phone, from anything that uses electricity in my house. So I'm really curious to know what will happen between now and 15 years when they enter the job market, and what will determine their choices. So thank you.
Absolutely, yes.
And maybe really to conclude, Sabine, Laura said, what will happen, we don't know, in 10, 15 years. If you will have to have a thought experiment over there and go on a time machine 20 years from now, how do you see the kind of situation that would develop, and what is your wish? It doesn't need to be completely just a forecast, you know, it can also be your wishes and your hope for the future.
Doing a forecast, I think this has been done, equality would be reached in 100 years. So I hope that if we have the pace we have now in our progress and gender equality. So I hope this is not going to happen. So I hope in 20 years, these forecasts are proven wrong and we arrived at something that my vision would be an inclusive society where we appreciate diverse gender identities. And I'm doing research now in robotics and healthcare, taking care, for instance, in the elderly care, and how these technologies could support nurses, but also individuals in living an autonomous and happy life. And here, again, the point is not that we want to replace human beings with this technology, but we want to use it to be better able to do our jobs and to do the things that we enjoy to do and that we love to do. So my hope is that we start asking the question, what do we want to work in the future and how do we want to work in the future? And then work on technologies that do the rest, right? And support us in doing what we want to do, right? Which human being do we want to be? Which society do we want to be? And I'm really fundamentally convinced that work is a part of our social identity. We want to contribute to society. We want to do meaningful things, right? And this should be at the core, that we can do these things, but are supported then with technology to even excel in what we want to do anyway.
Thank you, Sabine. This is a really very nice wish for the future. I see Laura is also nodding, so I guess we all agree. Right, Laura?
Absolutely. That was such a nice way to end this conversation.
Absolutely. Yes. And that really brings us to the end of this episode. So I would like to remind our listeners that this conversation was linked to the research project of Bruegel on the future work and inclusive growth in Europe. And The Sound of Economics is keeping following the project, and there will be more episodes dedicated to the theme to come. And as usual, you can read in open access all the analysis by our scholars on our website, www.bruegel.org. Thanks a lot for joining The Sound of Economics. Thank you, Sabine. Thank you, Laura.
Thanks, yeah. Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.